Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What is going on with you, Caitlin? What's this headwear we're wearing?
I am wearing a Tupac-style ACLU bandana in my jammies, as it happens. That's what is going on with me. The change in weather has brought out a horrific scalp condition, which everyone in our podcast listenership has now just become aware of. And so I have to sleep with stuff on my head, and you're seeing me with it on. We're doing this via video. You look nice and tan and in front of a Roland Garros beautifully architected wall eating a baguette. Doesn't get much more French than that.
No, I'm fully established into my Parisianism. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a word, but I just made it up.
The shit you say, I feel like, is made up anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, the education stopped at a certain point in my life, Caitlin, but let me just say something.
I blame Australia for all the sayings that I think are not actually real that you guys say.
Well, I mean, I don't care what I sound like and what verbiage I'm using today, because you look like
verbiage is not even a word.
You look like a total ding dong.
I totally look like a ding dong. I look insane.
You look like maybe you're wearing a large sock.
I think maybe we should capture this. I'll capture this screenshot. You hear me just screenshotting it. And so anybody who, we should do a contest. I'll figure out what it is and you can get a screenshot of us talking to each other for a special prize. Maybe our 100,000 listener, subscriber, I don't know, something like that. Anyway, I am talking to you today, the first day of the French Open. It is Sunday. This podcast will go out tomorrow, Monday, the second day of Roland Garros 2022. I have to say it's my favorite tournament, despite a lot of, it doesn't really deserve my love, but it gets my love anyway. You're there. What's the scene on the ground day one? What's been going on behind the scenes?
Well, it's pretty great. I do not like the fact that we start on Sunday. I'm just going to put that out there. But, you know, clearly they'd like to get a little bit more money up their sleeves. So I'm not a big lover of the Sunday start. But having said that, we've already had a major upset here in Ons Jabeur going out in the first round. Had a tough draw against Magda Linette from Poland, who's also quite a good player, can be very dangerous against anyone. And we saw that today. So, you know, when people come into Grand Slams and everyone thinks, oh, they're just going to rip right through like they've been doing all season, it's not so hard, especially when a lot of pressure would have been on Jabeur, the first time really that people would have been talking about her being one of the favorites to win the tournament. But overall, look, it's just great to be here, Caitlin. I haven't been to Roland Garros in a number of years, to be honest. So it's just great to see the new surroundings, the new building, the new stadiums. It's just great. I mean, you know what it's like here. It's just the vibe going on, especially on a Sunday. It's great.
It's a great vibe. And I think the last time I was there, they hadn't yet. They were building, but hadn't yet completed Court Simone Mathieu, which is a greenhouse, which is like an architectural marvel. It got profiled in Architectural Digest. So I had some friends going this year. And they were asking me what to watch. And I usually say, you know, get a grounds pass, try to find the outer courts. Those are all where the battles are, especially early. But I was also keen to get some pictures from them, from that new court, because I've heard it's gorgeous.
And because it's a podcast, you don't see us, but what I'm holding up is a water bottle. And the French Federation, Tennis Federation, have gone as green as they can possibly go. They're using green cars only, so battery card. They are not giving out water bottles, which is fantastic because tennis players go through so many water bottles, clearly because they need a lot of water when they're playing and when they're practicing. And instead, they've given about 4 water bottles to every player, and they're asking you to fill up the water bottles with, from the water fountains, and all the players are doing it. And I think it's a great thing that we're doing that because tennis really, really needs to improve on the amount of carbon footprint we put into this world. So that's a really great thing. So it's just pumped. I forgot to mention also Garbiñe Muguruza lost today against the giant killer Kaya Kanepi, who you never want to see at a Grand Slam ever.
Especially not in the first round. I was watching that match this morning, and even when Garbiñe won the first set 6-2, I was like, Garbiñe, you're in danger, girl. Kaya Kanepi is going to do what Kaya Kanepi does, and she did.
Kaya did another Kanepi on somebody. And that's the bottom line.
Well, bam,
we've got some upsets in the women's already. And it's just great to be here.
Let's very quickly touch on our guest this week. It is someone you know very well, Daria Gavrilova, better known as Dasha, now known as Daria Dasha Savo. She's newly married. And yep. She's a delight. What a delight it was to listen to this show. Maybe it was just Aussie on Aussie Russian. But she's such a delightful person. What an upbeat kid, despite having a litany of injuries. I mean, I think you said it. How many years has this girl lost to injuries off her career?
I would say four years off her career. She's 28 years of age. She's coming back again from another massive, injury to her Achilles and her, plantar fascia and all kinds of things. So she's just such a fun person. She's definitely one of the best TikTokers on the tour. She's hilarious. She's such a good person and, did actually win the doubles yesterday in Strasbourg. So you don't hear that in the pod because she's talking about being in the final. So she did win. She's a legend doubles player in Strasbourg. I think she's won it like 2 or 3 times, and she's probably only won like 3 events. So it was really nice to see her winning that. And she's just a delight. Hopefully she does well here in Paris because she needs those points. Considering Wimbledon aren't giving any, but we won't get into that yet, Caitlin.
We'll have to table that. Well, while we're on the topic of Strasbourg, and then I'll let this interview speak for itself because it really was a nice listen. When you were in Strasbourg, you were with Sam Stosur, who got a wild card into singles, which everyone on Twitter was losing their minds about because everyone who pays very close attention to the tour and the career of Sam Stosur, which I assume is every single listener of this podcast, Sam Stosur retired from singles at the Australian Open, but yet in Strasbourg last week, she had a shining moment on the singles court. What happened?
Well, she's won the Strasbourg tournament in singles a couple of times. So they absolutely went after her when they knew she was coming here to play doubles. And they said, Sam, do you want to wildcard in singles? We'd love to give it to you. They didn't have a French player really to give it to because they were playing other tournaments. And Sam's like, really? And he's like, yeah, we'd really like to give it to you because she's also very popular there. And so she said, okay, why not? And I said, she oscillated between whether or not to do it. And I said, look, you didn't have an opportunity to play on clay last year because she hurt her foot. And it's really her best surface, even though she won the US Open. And I said, hey, listen, it's just an opportunity for you to play one more match on clay. So why not? And she said, yeah, why not? And she did. And it was really cute. The girl that beat her, a young French girl, good player, Harmony Tan, when they shook hands, told Sam how much she admired her. And she saw her play the final in Paris and went on. And it was super cute. So it was just a really nice moment for Sam to have one more match on the red dirt in France.
Well, it sounds like Strasbourg was a smash hit for you and the Aussies, and hopefully some of those good vibes continue into Roland Garros. So with that said, we better rush to get this show out so these results don't sound super old by the time everyone's listening to them, because anything can happen at the French Open, as we know. And here is your fantastic interview with Dasha Saville.
Hi everybody, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest here this particular evening. I'm in Strasbourg, France, and I'm with my buddy Daria Gavrilova, now Daria Saville. So Dasha, First of all, I'm not going to call you Daria because the last time I think I called you that, I was mad at you. So I just want to thank Dasha. We're here in Strasbourg where she is in the finals of the doubles. Is that correct? Yes. So Dasha, thanks for joining me, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I mean, we've had a few dinners here together. I was saying maybe I've exhausted my, being social, but we're good to go, I think.
Yeah, you are definitely somebody who can talk more than me, which is saying something. So, Dash, let's get into it. The first thing I always ask all of my people that I have on the podcast is, why tennis? How did you get into tennis?
It was my dad. My dad always thought that tennis was one of the best sports for a little girl. And in Russia, where I grew up, I used to live close to a tennis club, Spartak. It's pretty famous. Mm-hmm. So that's how I started.
Who were some of the people around you at that time that, because it is a very famous tennis club in Moscow, correct?
Yeah.
Who were some of the people who were around about the same time? Well, actually, that were a little bit older than you at the time, that you were sort of watching at the time?
I think Dinara, Safina, and her brother, they were, and Miskina, Anastasia Miskina, they were, I think, I'm pretty sure from that club. And also, I don't know if many people know, but Andrei Rublev's mom was actually my first coach. So that's pretty cool.
Getting into, understanding, I love this opportunity to talk to you because you grew up obviously in a Russian mentality, Russian upbringing, Russian junior coaches, and now of course you're living in Australia, so, and you spend a lot of time in Australia now, and I always say that you, as a Russian, you are so Australian just because of your personality. Mm-hmm. But tell us the difference in the mentality of sort of what you think now, knowing the Australian mentality a lot, what the difference was with the Russian mentality, particularly as a young kid getting coached.
I mean, not going to lie, our coach, well, our playing group was so competitive. We actually had really good juniors. And yeah, we just were very competitive. And what was actually really interesting for me when I came to Australia, all the girls were so, so nice to me. And I was like, are they joking? Like, why are they being so nice to me? Like, I came from Russia, like, I just got my residency. Why are these girls treating me so nice? I was actually like surprised because in Russia, like the mentality was always like, you want to be the best and you compete even with your best friends. Like if you lose, you kind of like, you want everyone to lose straight away. You're like, oh, but that's one thing. And I guess, yeah, coaches were tough on us there. Mm-hmm. I think all of the kids were kind of terrified by coaches, and we just did whatever we were told to, really. I mean, I probably tried to be sneaky every now and then, but yeah, they worked us hard, and we spent so many hours at the tennis club, just especially in summers, from probably a morning session till we would be there till 8 p.m., 9 p.m.
Wow.
Like, we would just...
From what time, though? What time, like, did you start?
Maybe 11, 10? I don't know. Yeah, like, oh. I mean, we're not just playing tennis the whole time. We were, playing hide and seek and whatever, like...
What about school?
I'm talking like summers, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. When holidays. Mm-hmm. So we would have a proper like session, a squad, and then we would go and have lunch and play games, like non-tennis games.
Yeah.
And then we would just play doubles. We played so much doubles. Mm-hmm. And
wow,
and it was actually...
Why do you think the mentality was to do that? Because that's something that I don't think I've ever heard.
Well, the thing, like, there was not enough courts for so mm-hmm. many kids. So mm-hmm. we played doubles, and you stay on only if you win. We played We loved it. We just played doubles all the time.
And do you think that that's also good? And what age was that about?
Probably like 10.
Yeah. And do you think that, and it's funny because in Australia, my upbringing was to play a lot of doubles as well. Also similar reasons, because there wasn't a lot of courts and we just would play on the same court together. But do you think that that's important, as competitive as you were? Do you think it's important to also have that fun factor of sort of competing but being in a bit of a team environment?
Yeah, even though we're kind of each to their own, like fighting for to stay on the court, we had a lot of fun, and we like the coach was there but not really. They because the coaches were kind of having like they were socializing with the parents,
yeah,
because like, that wasn't their hours to coach us. So we kind of just
did
our own thing and just played and had fun. Yeah.
So you start going juniors, had a very successful junior career as well. What was the reasoning really for the Australian move, and how did that come about?
Honestly, I guess since I was a kid, I've always wanted to live elsewhere. And I played a few junior tournaments in Australia and I loved it. And I was like, I think this is like the country. If I'm gonna move and leave, this is where I want to end up being. And I didn't think I would make that move when I was 18, but
yeah,
I kind of did. I started dating Luke when we started dating, Facebook messaging when we were pretty young, and I was ranked maybe like 200, 230, and I was trying to make enough points to play Australian Open qualifying. And I convinced my dad that I had to go to Australia because the 25s there were a lot weaker.
They were.
I made it worked out for me.
Yeah.
And
was that because you had the grand plan to?
I actually wanted to see Luke, and my dad's like, "You guys are not that serious. Like, why are you going there?" And I'm like, "Well, it's just weak tournaments. Like, I'm gonna get, and it's expensive, right? It's an expensive trip." So I was going by myself. I was maybe 18, 19, can't remember. And so I went, and I made back-to-back semis. So I actually didn't play great tennis there, but somehow I got enough points. But my dad was like, "Don't forget to come back with an Australian passport." And actually, when I came to Australia, everyone knew me and Luke were dating. So they were all like, "Oh, when is she becoming Australian to Luke?" Joking. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, "Well, so you guys kind of have to stop joking, because I'm going to just... I really want to do this." So I approached... So Nicole was Nicole Pratt was head of women's tennis back, I can't remember, 2013, 14.
10 years ago, long time ago.
And I was staying there for a few more weeks to train before going to Japan. Can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was there just training for a week, and I joined the squads that she was running with Aussie girls. And my English was not like great, and I just talked to Nicole and I was like, "Can I please have your email? I need to send you an important email." And it's I still have this email. I need to, I should find it and read it out to you, because it's like there was maybe 5 sentences along, maybe less, but basically that, yeah, I want to become Australian, like I want to have the opportunity to represent Australia. And yeah, she just gave me a contact, immigration of the immigration guy, and then I emailed him, and it kind of just started.
Now, during this process, is Luke aware that you are trying to move there?
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure. And, okay, the funniest thing was...
Because there was a period of time where you actually broke up.
Oh, yeah. That was before that.
Oh, it was before that. Okay.
That was during, like, when we're playing junior Grand Slams.
Okay.
But, so I was practicing with Nicole in Melbourne, and I wanted to see Luke, but Luke was at Australian Institute of
Sport
in Canberra. Mm-hmm. That was where they had their base back in those days.
Yeah.
But, so he was there, and he couldn't come to Melbourne, like, he couldn't come, and I was in Melbourne staying with my friends, but then... He's like, hey, you should come to Canberra because no one's going to know that you're going to come because all the coaches are actually leaving to Melbourne for some conference. Yeah. I don't know, whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I should do that. And I had to message Nicole that I was sick. So I flew to Canberra to see Luke for a few days and then flew back. Well, I haven't told her this story until our wedding day, and she was like cracking up.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's a good story, though. And obviously, you know, we know the rest is history. You got your passport. You've represented Australia so many times now, Fed Cup and Olympics and all kinds of things. What does that feel like for you? Obviously, parents are Russian. Your dad's still in, and parents both live in Russia, and you're representing Australia. What? How does your heart and every? And of course, you and Luke just recently got married. So, I mean, you're real legit now. What does that feel like for you?
It's funny. I always, I get this question all the time, like during Fed Cup weeks, Billie Jean King Cup weeks.
Yeah.
How does it feel to represent your country? Mm-hmm. And I always like joke that, hey, I can't really say that as a little girl I grew up wanting to represent Australia. No, because I was in Russia when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of what everyone says, you know, mm-hmm. they say as a little girl. And I'm like, well, really? Were you actually thinking that? Yeah. So now, but I do feel like very Aussie and like I'm proud. And I feel, I get kind of like goosebumps. And I just think we're such a great, we all get along so well, the Aussies. And I feel like we're one of the best, teams, in terms of, our group.
Yeah, yeah.
We all want to help out each other.
Yeah.
Which is really, really nice. I don't just... I represent Australia, but I feel like I represent all my mates and
you're giving me a tear listening to this. It's good though.
Yeah, I love it. I don't just play, you know, for myself, especially when Sam is there, and I'm not just doing it for me. I'm I want to make Sam proud. With a teammate proud. It's cool.
Yeah. So take me back, Dash, because, you know, you're 28 now, correct?
Yeah.
Still a young soul, very young in tennis terms. You know, everyone really, so many players are peaking in their mid-30s now, you know, winning Grand Slams. And it's been a hard, tough professional life for you. Give the people who don't know you that well or may not know the history of you the injuries that you've had. Major injuries over the last, a lot of players would have retired going through what you've gone through in your career. Just give us a quick snapshot of some of the major ones and you've lost. Sam Stosur and I were actually talking about you yesterday, the day before, how proud we are of you and where you've come to just in the last 5 months even, because a lot of players would have retired with going through what you've been through, and you've lost about 4 years of your career with injuries. So give me some of them.
I mean, the main one is my Achilles.
Well, prior to that, you tore your ACL.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that one. I kind of forget, though. I don't find it a struggle. I'm I like tennis. I don't have a choice. I'm going to come back.
Yeah.
So every time someone asks me this question, I'm you know what? It's not that hard. Like, don't make it like.
But it's not easy.
No. Yeah. So since that chat I had with Pratty, with Nicole, I literally tore my ACL maybe a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to Australia with the busted knee, and basically I have an Australian knee.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had surgery there, and it was, my parents were terrified that I was 18 moving to another country having surgery, like going down, and they wouldn't be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was staying with they're like family to me, Kate Sheehan.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with her and Stormy, and they like took really good care of me. And yeah, like first few weeks I was just in bed because
It's a major injury. Had
the surgery, and I kind of was like, oh my god, this is hard. And they were, the girls were training, and I was like, oh, just sitting on the couch. And but then
came back from that very well. I got top 50.
The thing I remember when I was working with I had so many people helping me out. Like Tennis Australia has been in my corner for many, many years. Like, I'm very grateful for that. And I remember Aaron, who was the strength and conditioning coach back then, was saying that you're going to come back fitter than ever. And I was like, okay. Because I can't remember how old I was anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe I was older than 18.
Maybe probably 19 at that point.
Yeah. And he was right. I came back so fit. I was lifting really heavy. Like, then Stefano, you know Stefano, yeah. The mm-hmm. Italian guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I had Stefano and Nicole with me traveling. And I just had like a proper team for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of took off. Yeah. I had this crazy run in Rome from qualifying where, before that, I beat Maria Sharapova in Miami.
Yeah.
And that...
that let you know that you could play at the top
like,
level.
And I really... I just remember... just wanted to say that, like, if anyone young is listening to it, it's crazy. Like, I really believed that I could beat her. Mm-hmm. I've never played a top 10... maybe I have. I can't remember. But I really was... I remember I was trying my...
And why do you think that?
I don't know. But I bought this Lululemon outfit myself. Funnily, like, I'm sponsored by them now. And I remember, like, I loved it. And I was, like, watching myself in the mirror. And I was, like, practicing celebrations. Like, and who does that? How do you even think you're going to beat a number two in the world? And I really did.
And so you manifested that win.
Yeah. Like, I maybe should do that again sometime soon. Yeah. Roland Garros is not far away.
Yeah.
Today on the podcast, we have a fantastic sponsor. It is Sakara Lai. I have been dying to try this because the food looks legitimately delicious when my friends post about it on Instagram. And I have, like, the two of us just been sort of feeling like a little bit beleaguered and bloated. So when these plant-rich meals arrived at my door, our doors last week, I was pretty pumped to get to try them. Did you have any impressions from our three-day cleanse?
Yeah, well, you know, I also was on it a little bit as well before I went to Europe, so it was nice for me to also get it. And you're right, I didn't feel bloated, but most importantly, I, you know, had a bit of a high cholesterol the last time I went to the doctor. And so I'm really appreciative of like a plant-rich food because I really do need to start thinking about doing that a little bit more. And I knew I was going to Europe, and plant-rich is not really their forte, particularly in France. So I'm really enjoying them. And yes, so great to have them as one of our sponsors. And I'm loving it.
Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/racket or enter the code racket at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/racket to get 20% off your first order.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm not saying I took off. It's not like
no,
I was
but you were a very solid
semifinals,
player.
Yeah. But I was top 50, top 30. I remember Dave Taylor was like, I don't know why, but he's an interesting guy. He was kind of asking me all this like questions, and he was like, "When do you think? What ranking do you think? What year? Your,
what can you
what
think
your
you can
year end ranking is going to be?"
Yeah.
And I was like, I just threw, like, I threw a number. I was, like, 25. And I literally was, like, around there. Like, yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And
so that's the importance of manifesting stuff and really believing in yourself, you know, rather than shooting for, oh, I want to be top 100, you know?
Yeah, I... So then, yeah, I was playing well.
You won New Haven.
I won New Haven. But I remember I got the Achilles problem in 2016. So that's when me, Nick Kyrgios and I won the Hopman Cup. That was actually my first time representing Australia ever. Like, this is in December 2015, I just got my passport. So I could represent Australia.
Yeah.
And like, that's pretty cool.
yeah, very. And you won it.
It was amazing.
So you were having issues with your Achilles starting around 2016.
So January, yeah. I remember I looked at my heel and I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, I could see like a little bone bump.
Yeah.
And I was in second week of Oz Open. So my physio, Melanie, she was never going to freak me out.
Yeah.
So she's like, she
did what she could do.
Yeah. And then I think I was young and I was like, I had the ACL and like it was major,
yeah.
But I never had like niggles. Like I've never been.
Yeah. You've never been a player that's had, you know, an injury every couple of weeks.
Yeah. I would never go get treatment.
This is you to a T. You either do things really big or not at all.
Yeah.
Go big or go home, including injuries. So the Achilles was an issue ongoing for a couple of years, really, just bothering you until you finally said, I've got to have major surgery on that. And that was
2020?
Yeah. And so
2021.
When you had the surgery then, you had to rehab for approximately, 8 months? And then when you came back
months,
similar issue.
Just coming back now, basically.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
no,
you didn't.
No. I didn't have surgery back then.
Yeah.
So I had two injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I had my Achilles and my plantar fasciitis.
Mm.
And so I was rehabbing it. And then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And I was only meant to be out for 5-6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And then I came back I played 2020 Roland Garros.
Yeah.
And I was in a, I did a really good training block.
Yeah.
Just before Oz Open.
Yeah.
And
you were playing so well.
And I was playing really, really good.
Yeah. You were smashing everybody in practice.
People couldn't believe that I had surgery literally a week later.
Yeah.
Like, no one could believe this.
Yeah.
It was crazy because I remember I played Ash and it just went. My Achilles just was not, like, I felt it. It was really sore and I could barely walk off the court. Like, I literally had to throw my shoes off because it was rubbing on that spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to play doubles, which I did.
You know, you have that difficulty, then you have to have the surgery. I want to know, because I have to say, like, a lot of us were like, oh my God, like, how many more difficult moments can you go through physically and come back, you know? I want to know from your perspective when that happened, you know, and you had the surgery and you...
I really wanted that surgery. That's the funniest
thing. So when you get the surgery, you're positive about it. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah. I mean, after the match, I was cooling down, and I was there, and I was like, my pain is 11 out of 10, and they're like, nah, you're exaggerating, you just lost, like, calm down. I'm like,
you are sometimes a little low. You do
exaggerate. I know, but this time, I was like, guys, I'm having surgery, I don't even know what on, because this was the worst part is, like, there wasn't enough damage to go have surgery. Like, we tried to avoid it
mm-hmm.
as much as possible.
Yeah.
But so I played doubles, the tournament's finished, and I was seeing doctors at the Australian Open, and I had scans, and I was like, please, can something just show up?
Yeah,
because it would have been worse if it was just like the same, but I have so much pain.
Yeah.
I would have been.
No, I can understand that completely.
So I was like, please, can there be something really bad?
So at least you know.
Yeah. And so I had Hägglunds bump.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, for people to understand what it is. It's like bunions.
Yeah, bunions, yeah.
But on the back of your heel. And it was pressing on my tendon, which has been irritated for years. So my tendon is still irritated because it's like sensitized. Like my brain just always aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell my physios, no, it's bullshit, like unsensitize it. But I was like ready, and I had it was really hard to find someone who would operate it on without being too invasive.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few surgeons that would do that surgery, and one of the surgeons was who did my ACL. And I was like, oh my God, David
chances?
Young, are you kidding? I'm going, going there.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
I want to see him. Like,
yeah.
Let's go, let's do it. So,
and it was successful.
I literally messaged him straight away. Like, I was being naughty, like, I shouldn't have done this. I was like, I'm going to come see you. Because I kept in touch with him.
Yeah.
And he loves his job. Like, he was gonna operate on me that day if I wanted to.
Yeah.
He loves it. Like, he spends crazy hours there.
Yeah.
And obviously I went and saw David with Melanie, my physio. And I was ready, and I knew...
You're like, let's do this.
That it would take a while. I mean...
So it was another 7 months, approximately, right?
More.
Yeah.
And there was a point where it was not... Like, I honestly thought that my expectations, I had expectations that it would just go away completely, like it would be like my left Achilles.
Yeah.
But it's wasn't, yeah. And it's not.
Yeah.
And now I've accepted it. I'm like, whatever. Yeah. Like it is what it is. It lets me function the way I want to function. I can obviously play a 3-hour match and back it up. Like I'm fine.
Yeah.
But the first few months of after the surgery were
tough.
They were easy because I was actually improving quickly with so many things. Mm-hmm. Like, well, first 2 weeks I was just making my Dashlets bracelets.
Yeah.
And I couldn't move. But after, like, you start walking, it's slow, but there are, like, the improvements are pretty big.
So after, once you
But it took through, a while, like, once... 3 months. But then I still had pain, like.
And that was just tough for you.
And it just, I was like, oh, my God, are you joking? Yeah. Like,
it's never going to get better.
It's not going to get better.
Was there a period
better.
Of time where you thought your career might be over?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was that to deal with? A little bit emotionally.
Well, I think because I had such good people around me that
they never let you get
too down. They never let me get too down. Yeah, they would be like, well, you've got nothing. Like you still have to give it a shot. Like, yeah. Why did you even have surgery?
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, true.
But and are you glad you did now?
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be playing if I didn't.
So you come back again.
The worst part was that we were in lockdown.
Yeah. Tell people at home how difficult it was in Melbourne.
So all I did was going to the tennis, do my rehab, which was not very exciting.
Yeah. And go home.
And go home and just chill.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God I had tofu.
Yeah.
And my mom was there and my brother. While Luke was playing, so I didn't see him. We didn't see each other for like 8 months before we got married. So I had all these plans that at least I'll have like, I'll socialize with everyone.
Yeah.
After surgery, like I'll have normal life, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, because of lockdown.
So
when you had a, you know, good run, you had, you know, a nice little time in Australia, but then you come over this year to Palm Springs and Indian Wells and Miami and have a great couple of weeks. How much did that make you feel like you have gone through all of this stuff and you feel like, oh my God, it was all worth it, and it's all worth it with the results that you've had over the last few months? And do you feel like, all right, I feel like I can really get back to a really solid place in my career now?
So I came back during Billie Jean King Cup.
Yep.
So I had this, like,
that was a last minute call up for you.
That was a last minute call up for me. It's a long story, but basically we had a few injured players in the team, and they had to pick that week between Priscilla Hahn and myself. And we were both playing unbelievable because I think we really wanted to
be
in the team.
And you felt like you had nothing to lose.
And
just
I kind of was underdone. Like, I was underdone.
Yeah.
Not kind of, I was underdone.
Yeah.
I haven't even played 2 sets.
Yeah.
And I win that match, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like, what? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then I come back, and I mean, I was then just too, I was distracted, like, with wedding. And, like, not gonna lie, like, my preseason was probably, like, I didn't tick all the boxes because of,
and
like,
that's rare
the wedding, and I was distracted. And I knew, and it's the worst, like, when you know that you haven't done everything. I know some people can just not think about it, but for me it's important. And for some reason, like, I wasn't as motivated. Like the Aussie summer was right around the corner, playing at home. I, like, got the wild cards, and I wasn't playing well. And
why do you think that you weren't as motivated?
I wasn't. I don't know. And I felt bad. Like, I felt guilty. I'm like, what? Like, you just...
You went through all of this, and now
went
you're not...
all of... Yeah, and I just... I don't know. I was, like, not as excited. Like, and I was not overly happy. Like, I wasn't sad, but I just was, like... Like, just...
It was different...
I didn't want it. Like, yeah. I was, like... You know, I don't
as
know.
Much,
like, do I even
much.
Want to play tennis? Like...
Yeah.
And I was surprised. Like, I was like, what is going on? And then, like, I got killed.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't get killed, but I wasn't winning practice sets. And I was like, I don't think I'm, like, I've got the level. Like, I'm way off.
Mm.
But the reality was that's what was in my head. Like, the reality was I was a lot closer to being, like, at... Not at that level, but...
A good level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think and didn't trust and...
So what changed? What changed going to Indian Wells and having that experience? Obviously, having that experience at Fed Cup was good.
We had this... I'm having a practice with Nicole Pratt and Storm, and I'm just being, like, all crazy on court, like... making stupid decisions, and we're playing points, and Storm is just, like, killing me. And I'm, like, feeling, oh, poor me. Oh, my God, I'm not playing well. Why am I even going overseas? Like, what's the point? Like, I'd rather be with my dog.
Yeah.
And they sat me down, and they're like, you need to stop, like,
being negative and
feeling sorry for yourself. Like, you need to, literally, Nicole said, the best thing that you can do is actually get out of Australia because you're...
Getting comfortable.
You're, exactly. You're way too comfortable here.
Mm.
And I was, like, that's probably why I wasn't motivated. Like, I mean...
Yeah, because it had been probably almost 2 years where you'd really been home.
Yeah.
And you probably had never felt that feeling in your entire life.
Yeah, like, I... stayed at home for Australian Open. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, it was like...
It's one of the things that I feel like, you know, when everyone's like, you know, why isn't Australia have more dominant players? And, of course, we just recently had a number one in the world, so it's possible, and Ash is as laid back as they come. But I think it is one of the things about being from Australia, and even from the United States sometimes, is that it's pretty easy. You know, it's a pretty
easy life.
It's a good life. You're not really stressed about stuff, and that's the one thing about maybe the Russian mentality and the... You know, growing up in that sort of different coaching style, they're very tough on you. They're not overly nice. You know, the girls aren't overly nice to each other. And that's some things, you know, that you have to really deal with as an Australian or as an American or as coming from a very wealthy or well-to-do country, is that you got to really push yourself hard. So did
probably
you...
a Grand Slam country, especially.
Well, you're getting funding and it's a little bit easier. So you started clearly feeling a little bit less sorry for yourself. You get on the plane, you go play Indian Wells. What was it like for you to win those
events? I went
to
Guadalajara, and I was there. I was traveling with Storm and our strength and conditioning coach, who was doing the whole rehab process. And he was so excited to, like, just go on the road.
Yeah.
And we were, like, and, like, I didn't work on anything mentally. It's not like I went and... started journaling or doing meditation. I just literally got on the plane and I changed my attitude, like,
straight away.
Like, I got there, I'm there with my coach Jay, and I am straight away, like,
in.
Like, I'm here, like, let's go, let's do this.
Yeah.
And I beat Emma
Raducanu.
Like, it was... Well, it still is one of the longest matches, and we didn't even finish the match. And then I backed it up, and I was like, oh my God, I played the longest match of the year, and I was able
to come back
and play again.
Not feel badly.
Like, and I was, because I was, didn't know how my Achilles would feel, and it felt good. So actually, what I was focusing on was small wins. Like I aimed really low to then reach that goal because I didn't want to disappoint myself. So I
think part of it is also because you'd been through so much physically, you sort of for the first time maybe in your own life, you gave yourself a bit of a break to not have those hugely high expectations because you're very tough on yourself. So do you think maybe for the first time you're like, you know what, let's just go and play and enjoy it because you're healthy and you gave yourself maybe a little bit of a break.
Yeah, I had low expectations. Because
you always have high expectations.
Yeah, everything was a win for me. Like playing a disciplined point, that's a win. Like being able to concentrate for 5 more minutes than the day before, that's a win. And
physically being healthy, that's a win.
Like just everything, like not freaking double faulting 10 times because I'm freaking out. Like seriously, like that's why my serve got so much better, because
you worked on it.
First of all, I worked on it, but I just like was happy
to be playing,
to freaking make it rather than hit the biggest second serve of my life and not make it, you know, like the little thing. Like I would rather make it and then hit a winner than, because I was getting angry when they would hit a winner.
Yeah.
But that's just how women's tennis works.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's just how it is. But so I was accepting things for what they are. And yeah, I had low expectations. But it's funny, like now that, like people say, oh, you had a couple of like
great few tournaments,
months. I'm like, it was only really like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
But now I kind of have expectations that, well, I've beaten Ons and I made quarters of Miami or second week of Indian Wells, that like I should back it up.
Yeah.
And
so
I feel
so be your best. Be like your own doubles partner. What would you tell yourself now then? Because you've had a couple of tough losses over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You lost 7-6 in the third, and you're going into a Grand Slam. First time, you know, since the Australian Open, you have an opportunity to do well at a Grand Slam. So what do you tell? And this is for other people at home or people that are listening. What would you, as a doubles partner or as a coach to yourself, what's the best thing that you could tell yourself now?
Well, I actually was writing things down, like in my... like I do journal.
Yeah.
So I kind of like set goals.
Yeah.
And I think, and then I have like, I made a diary that like I have a section like from each month, like a goal and then what I've learned. And then I kind of went back on what I've learned from March, from when I did well in Guadalajara and Indian Wells Miami, that trip, and it said that I was enjoying the small wins and I was having low expectations, like smaller goals, but then they were more achievable.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's right. Like, why all of a sudden I have like high expectations? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying like I'm just here as a tourist at Roland Garros.
Although we have enjoyed ourselves.
But
and nobody has a TikTok like you. Nobody has a TikTok account like you.
But I literally wrote down, okay, like I haven't played a clay court season.
Yeah.
And I haven't had a singles win. And I literally just wrote, let's have
a win.
One singles win. Like, I'll be happy with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it can take me anywhere. Like, I don't know. I mean, and just that, like, and I'm just going to enjoy the small wins along the way for like preparing. Like, I'm excited. We're in doubles finals, like play on Saturday. It's been fun. And it's funny, like playing with Nicole, I think, it's like I'm so much more positive on the double score. Like, I'm pretty positive when I'm playing well.
Yeah.
But I can get angry with myself. And I was just like thinking, imagine if I was like getting angry at Nicole, like if she would miss.
You like, treat yourself worse than you treat your partner.
Like if she would miss like an easy smash or an easy shot, like I wouldn't just be like, oh my God, you're an idiot. Like, but that's something I would say to myself. And then, like, I'm like, okay, I need to be more, I need to talk to myself the way I talk to, pretend that like there is someone playing with me, like a partner.
So other than that, which I think is a great thing, you, what would you go back and tell your 18-year-old self, the person, the kid that moved from Russia to Australia, what would you tell them now? If you could whisper in their ear.
Good move. Then you moved to Australia. I mean, I'd literally be like, go to Australia and move. I don't know. That's a hard one. Because I still feel like an 18-year-old sometimes. I think I would be, I would say, don't be so hard on yourself. Enjoy every little moment, because there's so many things you can, like, there's so many, seriously, there's so many little things that make me happy. And like now that I recognize them, I just like, I'm a lot more positive. Like even like I get happy at the, if I'm staying at the hotel that has like a really strong hot shower, like that makes me really like small things you don't understand. And like, cause I think when I was 18, I was not aware of things that were like kind of making me happy. I don't know if it makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, now you're a married woman. You're a mother of a child of ducks. And so, you know, life has definitely changed over the last 10 years. But it's been great to sort of see it all happen, and all the ups and downs and the physicality that, you know, physical problems you've had and the injuries. And as your friend, I have to say, it's been really remarkable, and it's been really nice to see you continually always fight back with exactly the same attitude, which is always just that joyful person to be around. And it's great to see you back, Dasha. And so thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Dasha.
Good luck in Paris.
Let's go. Just one win, guys. Come on.
Just one win, because if you get one, I bet you you get two.
Right?
Yeah. Thanks, Dasha.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.